We're at the Aberdeen Maritime Museum on Ship Row, Aberdeen. Very historic part of the city. This is traditionally the main route from the harbour, which is just a few metres behind us, up to the main street, Union Street in Aberdeen.
John Edwards is curator at the Maritime Museum.
As we go in, you'll see a huge oil platform model above our heads, and that is one of the main themes of our museum here in Aberdeen. Inside the building, we can see this large oil platform model. This is the Murchison oil platform, which is very indicative of the type of platforms that are in the North Sea. There are 105 such platforms in the North Sea at the present time. The Murchison was built in 1979-1980, and it's very typical of the British style of oil platforms. Our model is almost 10 metres high, and it punches its way through three floors of the Maritime Museum, so it gives people an idea that this is a massive structure that's out in the North Sea. Of course, that's one of the challenges of the museum, is trying to interpret this huge industry, which nobody can quite frankly see because it's all 125 miles off of Aberdeen. So by having models such as this, which show the scale and size of the industry, it gives people a much better idea as well.
It was first and foremost a port, a fishing port mainly, but also I think it dealt in textiles and textiles trade. So it would have had international connections before 1900, and probably quite dense international connections in terms of the amount of activity in the local economy that was dependent on trade. But those connections, although they would have been international, they would have been fairly localised in the sense of probably across the North Sea with Baltic cities and regions. In the 20th century, some of those international connections from Aberdeen began to disappear as the textile industry declined and the paper industry, which was another mainstay of the economy, declined as well. And I think fishing also would have not fallen away completely. It was still a very important part of the local economy, but it probably became less important. And so Aberdeen, by the 1960s, had kind of almost retreated into a kind of regional backwater within the UK. And certainly, although the national economy at the time was doing reasonably well. And then it's within that context, the oil and gas is discovered in the North Sea, and suddenly, from being a relatively disconnected in a regional backwater, you suddenly see that it becomes the focus of international attention as multinational firms begin to move into the region again.
The effect of the oil industry on the growth of Aberdeen in the 1970s was phenomenal. The number of companies in the city increased tenfold. The number of people in the oil industry rose from 1,500 in 1970 to 30,000 in 1979. The number of flights registered at Aberdeen Airport went from 25,000 a year in 1970 to 200,000 in the 1980s.
Please, passengers traveling on the first flight to the Bell Offer, will you please proceed to the security area with baggage?
That means one flight movement every 3 minutes. Aberdeen Airport became, and still is, the busiest helicopter airport in the world. Energy Minister in the 1970s was Tony Benn, who wrote in his diary, "I hadn't realised the magnitude of the North Sea oil development. It really is huge." In 1973, Arab members of OPEC, the Organisation of Petroleum Exporting Countries, announced that they would no longer ship petrol to nations that had supported Israel in its conflict with Syria and Egypt. That also meant the USA and its allies in Western Europe, which included the UK. Oil prices shot up and the British economy went into crisis.
As a result of the OPEC crisis and the hike in world oil prices around about the period 1973-74, it plunged the British economy, of course, into a real fuel crisis. And we had events like the three-day week when we had to shut down production. And in the sense, the whole British economy was basically forced with a real crisis and problem to do with availability of oil and gas supplies. It's in that context, then, that we have to see the rapid development of the North Sea oil and gas resources from the mid-70s onwards, because not only did it coincide with the interests of the major multinational oil companies to find an alternative source of supply and exploited, having lost control over some of their supplies elsewhere, it also tallied very nicely with the British state's interests in terms of developing indigenous energy resources, so it wasn't dependent upon importing fuel from elsewhere. So that's why we saw a very rapid development of North Sea oil and gas from the mid-70s onwards, which obviously benefited the national economy, benefited multinational oil companies to do that, but it wasn't necessarily in the interests of the local economy and issues of regional economic development in terms of developing an indigenous knowledge base in the industry.
The oil crisis had a major impact on Aberdeen. Getting oil and gas ashore was hugely expensive, and it wasn't until the mid-70s, after the OPEC crisis, that capital investment into the region to help get the oil ashore more cheaply was forthcoming. Almost overnight, Aberdeen became integrated into a global economy, becoming a major contender in the world's oil industry.
So Aberdeen became connected into this wider global production system, but it was being set by the multinational companies operating outside of Aberdeen. So they would actually bring most of the knowledge, the technology, to develop the oil resources from outside of Aberdeen, the region. And people in Aberdeen were employed for very, very basic tasks, like servicing the oil workers with things like food and drink or providing, you know, very basic materials. But firms operating locally didn't actually get involved in that much higher value added, more technically demanding activities within the industry. These were still dominated by foreign companies, particularly from the US. So we didn't just have the major oil companies dominating the local economy, but also all their major suppliers in terms of technical equipment and knowledge and expertise would have come from the US and other parts of Europe as well.
The chaotic rush for oil was fanned by the government, desperate to get the profits to pay the bills, and it was also hurried by the oil companies. The North Sea had been drawn up into blocks, and through a series of licensing rounds, the companies were leasing them out in a desperate attempt to discover oil and start production. So behind this charge was a massive and fast-growing crowd of investors, entrepreneurs and speculators, all chasing after what the black gold could do for them. Aberdeen was being integrated into a globalized economy because of the investment being made there by multinational oil corporations. This meant that there was an influx to the city of workers from all over the world.
Because of the very nature of it, it's always been a very transient industry, and you've always had, you know, teams of people within companies that have straddled the globe in a true transnational sense of the word. You know, we often say globalization is an overstated term, but in terms of how these people work, they do actually live quite global lives in the sense that teams of people that will go looking for oil all over the globe and in a very transient way, a few weeks here, a few weeks there. You know, so you do have a rotating mass of workers, you know, that travel the globe in that sense.
Back in the early 70s, when the oil fields was first up and running, and the Americans were fairly dominant, particularly in the drilling side, they used a phrase about local Scots and English who came to Aberdeen to work in the oil industry. They referred to the locals, the Aborigines, as tartan coolies. And they had no respect for them. It was higher on fire. Things got bit better towards the middle of the 70s and by about the 80s, and particularly after Piper Alpha, when respect was demanded by the workforce and the public eye was on the industry, a lot of these attitudes became unfashionable and largely not quite disappeared.
Aberdeen was fast becoming a city where oil workers would come to stay or to pass through. It didn't matter which, says Andy Cumbers. It all helped to reinforce Aberdeen as an important city within the global oil network.
You've got these small teams where people know each other in this very, very, probably quite dense personal networks, but actually these are quite global because it'll be a case of people bumping into people that they've worked with on the other side of the world. You know, you'll see somebody in the street of Aberdeen who you last saw perhaps in Peru or in Southeast Asia, you know, and they've worked for you on a project. So there's a level of trust and so on that's built up. And these networks are actually the kind of glue that holds the industry together, but they do operate globally, I think it's fair to say, although they're not disembedded from place, because certain places within the global oil network become key points or nodes at particular moments in time to do with particular producing regions. Aberdeen's a good example of that, Houston also, and those places are regular meeting places still within this wider network.